gospel, which is good news to us, and it is good news to others. And there is nothing more compelling than a great story. You know, on Saturday, or was it Friday? I forget when. Was it Friday? We went to go see Beauty and the Beast? Friday. See, I knew it. Friday, guys. It was a date, so it was memorable. And we went to go see Beauty and the Beast. And it's incredible because Disney is starting to make all of these movies from my childhood, and they're redoing all of these cartoons. And I remember at the time, I didn't like them because they were all love stories, especially Beauty and the Beast. And I grew up in a house full of women. I had two sisters and a mom. So that's all we saw was, I mean, Grease. I saw that movie like 18 times. We just saw these romance movies. And so when Beauty and the Beast came out, I thought, man, I want to see that again. I want to see what that looks like. And it reminded me of a time where another movie came out that Natalie and I went and saw, and it was The Lion King. They released it into the movie theaters. Now, have any of you ever, you saw a movie when you were a kid, and then you rewatched it when you were older, and you realized how ridiculous it is, or how good it is? And so we went in seeing The Lion King. I thought, it's going to be great. It's JTT, you know, it's going to be singing. It's going to be the movie that I love. But there's a scene that I forgot that's in that movie, and many of you know this. It's scarred into my brain. And if you've ever watched Lion King with your children, you most likely skipped that scene. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's the scene where Mufasa, I don't want to ruin that movie, something bad happens to him. It's a good movie, trust me. Something bad happens to Mufasa, and there's this really touching scene, and now you have to imagine, I am watching this great story, I'm watching this movie, and I'm 30 years old, and as I'm watching this movie, I'm crying. Like, I am actually crying. Natalie is in tears. She is just sobbing, because she doesn't have that emotional block I do, you know, but I just a solitary tear ran down my face, and I forgot how great this movie is, how great this story is. See, there's something so compelling about a great story, and it's even better when that great story is true. See, I want to put fantasy and cartoons into one box, and now I want to look at it. It's even better when a great story, it's true. We get to see real people overcome incredible odds, doing miraculous things, inspiring crowds of thousands, maybe even millions, to do the impossible. See, there is something about a real story that carries more weight than a story founded in fantasy. See, think about the story of Martin Luther King. And many of you witnessed that and saw this and saw that happen before your eyes. But to read about and to watch and to listen to that great story is inspiring. Think about the band of brothers in the 101st Airborne. When you hear what those men went through, the odds that they overcame, the amount of brothers they lost in battle, when you read about all of the things they did, it's incredible and it's inspiring. Hannibal crossing the Alps and all of history, when we learn about the amazing things that happened. And the truth is, we all want to be a part of an epic story, right? We all want to be a part of something great and grand. We all want to be changing lives and doing something impossible. We all want to be looked at and thought, man, look at that person, look what they did, right? Or at least I'm the only one. I mean, that's something I want for my life. I mean, it's one of the reasons I went into ministry. I thought, man, I'm going to be able to convert thousands of people. People are going to hear my sermons and just going to be falling in love with Jesus. And I'm still waiting for that to happen. I'm still waiting for the thousands of converts. But yeah, I want to be a part of an epic story. I want to be a part of something bigger than me. And being a part of this church and what we just saw is a part of that great story. I love that we are with a congregation that appreciates the teachers, the ones who are sacrificing their weekends, their weekdays. I love this, seeing the women in this congregation. It humbles me. It reminds me of how much work we all have to do to inspire and to teach our children this epic story that we are a part of. And Jesus' story is epic. And I want you to know that people outside of this building are desperately trying to find out where they fit in this story. You know, we learn, when we learn about our culture, when we learn about where our this generation is headed, we can kind of get depressed because we feel like, or we read about, their disinterest in church. And we kind of assume that means that they're disinterested in God or they're disinterested in Jesus, and that is not true. The truth is that this is a very spiritual generation. This is a very spiritual culture that we live in. It just looks different, drastically different than what many of us are used to. See, people are looking at where they fit into this story, and they're expecting us to tell them that, to inspire them, to show them this is where you fit into Jesus, into his story. See, many of us unfortunately believe or have believed that God does not take, or I'm sorry, many of us believe that God does not take a back seat to his creation, that he is hands on. But that brings with it many uncomfortable questions. See, we believe that God just did not create in the beginning and then just let it spin and see what happens. That is not what God did. That is not what God is doing. But if we believe that, and if we go out and we tell others that you are a part of this ongoing story, that God just did not create and spin the globe and then just said, let's see what happens. No, he is hands-on, that he is a part of our lives, a part of this creation. Then that means we have to answer some very difficult questions. Then why do bad things keep happening? Why does it feel like things are getting worse? Right? When you read the news, when you watch the news, when you talk to your grandchildren, when you talk to your grandparents, why does it feel like it's just getting worse? If God is hands on, if God is a part of this creation, then why doesn't it look better? Why doesn't it look easier? What is happening here? Why does God allow so many bad and evil things to happen? Where is love and compassion in the face of murder, abuse, and rape? God, if you are hands-on, then where are you? And you have to be comfortable in the face of those questions. You don't have to understand it. You don't even have to have all the correct answers. But you will be asked those questions. I have been asked that question hundreds of times from youth, from young adults, from skeptics, and from other Christians. It's important to consider when you're telling others about the story of Jesus. Maybe that's why we are so comfortable with a hands-off God. Or a God that is so distant from us that he can't be bothered with his creation or their problems. See, that's the type of theology I grew up with. It's so uncomfortable answering that question that instead I'll adopt a philosophy or a theology on, well, what if God did spin it and he tried his hand at mankind, and we have this Old Testament tale, the history of God's interaction with mankind, but it's sloppy and it's ugly. There's a lot of death in the Old Testament. So instead of that God, I'll look at Jesus, because Jesus seems to be the compassionate guru. He seems to be the Messiah I love. He seems so distant from the God of the Old Testament. But we have to recognize that when we tell others, we must be honest with who God is. We must be honest with who Jesus is, and Jesus is the very image of the invisible God. So we begin this epic story with the power of Jesus in our lives, because this is where so many people have a conflict. Now, I know that many of us, we would want to start off with an easier topic. We want to start off with the teachings of Jesus, and I suggest to you that confronting the actions of Jesus prepares them for the teachings of Jesus. When we see Jesus act and we read his story of what he did and what he said, we get a better understanding. We get a better view of when Jesus teaches and when Jesus preaches to us. So first, we're going to be looking at the power. And if you have your Bibles, I want you turning over to Mark chapter 4. And we're going to start in verse 35. Sorry, man, this cough is not leaving me. So many people have an issue with this idea of a powerful Jesus, of a miraculous Jesus. Many people will respond to you and say, well, wasn't Jesus 2,000 years ago? Doesn't he even matter today? Can he do anything for me right here and right now? So yeah, most people will look at Jesus, and if they consider him a historical figure, if they will even admit that, the only thing they will admit further than just the fact that he was alive is that maybe he was a great philosopher. Maybe he was a great rabbi, a teacher. But to accept Jesus as anything more is ridiculous and absurd. It's outlandish. You're asking me to accept fantasy. When you try to get me to accept a Jesus who is beyond just a teacher, I'll accept the quotes. I'll accept the really good teachings of Jesus saying, love others, love your neighbor as yourself, and forgetting about the loving God part. And that's optional, right? But we need to love each other. Why? Because I said so? I don't know. What other authority do we have? We should love each other because that's socially acceptable. But loving God, that's dangerous. You know, we saw how Paul defines Jesus in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 15, and we see how God defines Jesus in Genesis 3, where he talks about this is the enemy. This is the correction I'm going to give mankind, and he's going to heal the rift between man and God. But I want to see just how does the gospel present Jesus. And before we read, I want you to consider something. I want you just to tell you my philosophy when reading the story of Jesus to others is to fall on the side of brutal honesty. Do not sugarcoat this, which is what we want to do. If we sit down with somebody and we want to have a Bible study, we want to present to them the best possible picture of Jesus. The Jesus free of the lacking faith part. The Jesus free of condemnation. The Jesus that says, many will say, Lord, Lord, but few will draw near to me. I want to present the nice Jesus, right? Because I want them to come to church and I want them to like me and I don't want them to think of me as judgmental. So I want to present a nice Jesus. I don't want you to do that. I want you to read the story and its entirety and in its context and believe that God is big enough to defend himself. God is big enough to defend himself. Now, that's a big truth. And the only way you will experience this is if someone comes to you and says, but why did God do to Jericho? Why did God do that? He sent Israel into the promised land, and his first order to Joshua was, kill everybody. I don't know. You're going to have to go to God for that. I don't know what answer I can give you that you're going to enjoy outside of look to God. Look to the reasons he gives that God is big enough to defend himself. Don't sugarcoat the hard truths in the Bible and don't pretend to understand everything or to know all the answers. Imagine, if you will, that you are on the very same journey as they are. That when you read the story of Jesus, you're there with them. You are discovering these things with them. Except for you've already read the book, you know the ending. In which should, again, be good and great. So when you're telling people the story of Jesus, you know the ending. You know the purpose. So that when you are telling them, you can smile and you can laugh and you can say, look at what Jesus did and look what he does through my life. So with that philosophy, I want us to read in Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 35. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side. Now, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. Now, there were also other boats with him, and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. And Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? Now, he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the waves, be quiet, be still. And when the wind died down, it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. Now we are going to continue reading. And to each part of this story, because we're going to read the storm, well, we read the storm first, and we're going to proceed to read about the demons. Each part of this story has an obvious part. And each story has, well, an uncomfortable truth. So I want to focus on the obvious. Raise your hand if you have ever been in a storm out in sea. All right, how many of those were cruise ships? Because that almost doesn't count. Right? I mean, cruise ship out in a storm is nothing. I tried to go on a cruise because there might be a storm during the trip, just because I wanted to know what the experience was like. You know, if you ever watch on YouTube, storms out in sea, you see the incredible, what a storm can do to an enormous ship. I remember years ago during Jimmy Ewald's bachelor party, I believe it was his bachelor party, he took a boat out to Catalina Island, right? And that wasn't even a storm. It was so choppy, everybody was throwing up their guts. It was not the funnest trip. I remember that because as they came back, they were all looking purple and blue, and all of them were like swearing off boats for the rest of their life. That wasn't even a storm. So I want you to imagine this. You are out. The sun is setting. Now, many of you are just getting anxious thinking about being out on a boat in the middle of the ocean or in the middle of a sea or in the middle of the water. For me, I'd be anxious just leaving the shore. That's uncomfortable for me. As the sun is setting, you see a storm coming. And it is a big storm. All right, you are used to seeing storms. You're used to weather. These men were fishermen. These men grew up in and around this area. They knew what to expect. And so as this storm is hitting them over and over and over again, and again, many of you are just holding on for dear life, right? You're just tying yourself on a rope. You're just like, don't kill me, God, what are you doing? And so out of your desperation, because the waves are coming over this boat, and this boat is not very big. It isn't very big at all. It's probably just big enough for 12 men to stand. And as you see the waves getting larger and bigger, and you see and you feel your fear and your anxiety of, what do we do? We're too far out to swim, and if we do swim, we're going to drown. Where do I go? What do I do? And so you look to the one person who's sleeping, but also is the one person who could do anything. Who could do anything. This man claims to be the Son of God. Now, I don't imagine that everything calmed down as this was going through Peter's head, but I imagine that out of their desperation, they look to the one person who, if anything could be done, he could do it. And so they wake him up. And with the same regard that you give a child who wakes you up on a Saturday morning, Jesus looks to the storm and says, quiet. Silence, please. 5 more minutes. I don't know what Jesus did. Right? I know if our kids are up at like 6 on a Saturday, we just throw pillows at the door. We just go back to sleep. Just go somewhere else. And so with the same demeanor, and again, this is how I am imagining this play out in my head. Jesus comes up. He doesn't even address his apostles. You know, he just comes up and goes, please quiet down. And the storm quiets. I love that story. That's the obvious story. Because think of this. The storm is something completely out of their control. It is far beyond them. They could not even affect this thing if they wanted to. See, this storm, their livelihood depends on the seasonal storms. They knew what this meant. How many of you have ever seen a storm on land from a distance and you are just speechless at the beauty of God's nature? I will this Sunday admit to you one thing. Lubbock has one beautiful phenomenon, and that is, and it's most of the panhandle, and it's the storms. It's the storms you see for miles and miles off because there's no other natural feature to block your view from it because there's no trees or mountains or anything like that. But as you see it coming, it's beautiful and it's grand and it's black and it's boiling. And you at least have a day and a half to prepare because, again, you're seeing this from a distance. But it's beautiful. Then it hits. and something else happens entirely. I remember standing on the roof in Lubbock, and everyone said that you had to witness this, and it was a dry storm, a lightning storm. And so we're up on the roof of this two-story apartment complex, and for the first time, you know, in Northern California, where I grew up, if a thunderstorm happened, it would be maybe six strikes, and that would be it. And there'd be chaos afterwards, because those six strikes would usually start a forest fire. In Lubbock, there were hundreds of lightning strikes and no rain. It was gorgeous. It was deafening, breathtaking. I looked at that storm and I saw God is incredible and extremely scary. This is in one part of a large world where God is demonstrating his force, and many of us have seen this. But the firestorm that happens afterwards, then the entire panhandle of Texas turns to an actual frying pan and it burns. So these men look at the storm and they see livelihood. They see chaos. They see destruction. And how many of us are living in that type of world right now? See, on land, a storm can provide food and water and assurance of the changing seasons. On water, this same storm can easily kill you without a second thought. And honestly, it would be your fault, because you are the one out on water during a storm. See, Jesus deals with a storm in the same way we deal with children. He looks at our problems. He looks at the issues that we have that we think are so insurmountable, so unbelievably complex that we cannot change them if we wanted to. And he looks at those problems and he says, be quiet. Be quiet. So what is the storm in your life? What can provide you both with assurance and destruction? I don't know, taxes? Whether you got a tax return or an audit? Whether you get a job promotion or you're let go? How many of you have been offered something that is completely outside of your control that can both destroy you, but yet also provide for you? But for whatever reason, it fills you with terror and fear. Are you listening for Jesus telling you and the problem to be quiet? To be quiet. We will get to the uncomfortable truth after Mark chapter 5. Of the storm. But the story continues. Now remember, verse 35. The day when evening came, he and his disciples went. So evening is coming, it is dark, and you just witnessed a dude who was sleeping calm a storm, and you are freaked out. You are scared out of your mind. You want to be anywhere but inside of that boat. All right, that's when put yourself in the sandals of the disciples. You want to be anywhere else. And so the first time your boat, or when as soon as your boat touches land, you jump out because you just want to be away from this guy because you don't know what he's going to do next. So you're excited and you jump out, and this is what happens. Chapter 5, verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. How awesome is this? So you get out of a boat after suffering from a storm, and you find yourself in the middle of the night in a cemetery. Right? With a crazy person screaming in the wilderness. Now, as I imagine this, I see smoke billowing out of the tombs. Right? I imagine this like it's a Halloween horror special. And so as they get out, they're scared, and as soon as it's quiet and all of a sudden they hear this just like gurgling, yelling off in the distance. And you think to yourself, what can I get back on the boat? Verse 3, this man lived in the tombs and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from the distance, he ran and fell on his feet in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want from me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." When Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, which is the creepiest name any demon can possibly have. And he replied, "For we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send him out of the area. And a large herd of pigs were feeding on the nearby hillside, and Jesus sends him in to those pigs. See, the obvious truth of this story is the demons are the unknowable reality that we struggle with. It's the unforeseeable. It's maybe the bills that we don't know are coming our way. Maybe the medical expenses. It's so nerve-wracking going to an ER nowadays because you don't know what's going to happen. You go to the ER over what you think you're dying of, and it comes out to be indigestion, and that's one thing, but then what's next? The bill. The bill, right? And you're waiting for that bill. You're just, it's eating you up. It's like, am I going to be able to pay rent? Am I going to feed my kids? What is this bill going to look like? It's unknowable, it's unforeseeable, and it's just too much for me. The demon comes from a reality that we do not see and we are uncomfortable dealing with. And Jesus' power here is complete and absolute. There is no exorcist-like repetition. And if you've ever seen that movie, it's ridiculous. It's the idea of a priest coming up to a demon and saying, "May the power of the Lord compel you, power of the Lord." And he does that over and over and over again. It doesn't even work. Jesus doesn't even do that. He says, get out. Get out. And then the conversation that happens afterwards is a response to Jesus initially saying, get out. And so the demon tries to negotiate his surrender. See, what is your unknown fear? The thing that you worry about, the thing that you lose sleep over, because Jesus has power over what we cannot see. So real quick, I'm going over, I apologize. The uncomfortable truth of this story is, first, if you were desperate and you went to Jesus for help, why would he ever say, "Why are you afraid? Why do you lack faith?" Jesus, the disciples go to Jesus for help that only he could provide, and his response to him is, "Why? Why are you afraid? Did you see this? I know you were sleeping, but did you see the storm?" You know, we sang a song that's great and beautiful. It says, "No boat can sink where lies the Lord of masters, ocean, sky, and birds, and whatever." But I have to ask this question. Jesus, what did you want from them? What did you want from them? What did you expect from them? To let them suffer? How about this? Will you still believe in God if he doesn't quiet the storm? Will you believe in Jesus Christ if he allows the boat to sink? Will you stay as strong if fill in the rest? He doesn't do what we want or expect. He doesn't follow our parameters of what a Messiah should do. Think of this. He has a conversation with a demon. The demon gives him two requests, and Jesus fulfills both of them. What? Jesus, why have a conversation with a demon? Think of this. The man who was possessed will live with the rest of his life, for the rest of his life, with scars. He was just abused by something that was completely out of his control. How many people do you know who live daily with abuse? Daily having been tormented. And Jesus' response is, "Okay, demon, I'll let you do whatever you, go into the, I won't torture you, just go in the pigs, just go away." And he leaves a man with scars. Will you still be faithful when the power of Jesus Christ stops just far enough to remove your scars? And he lets you live with that. That's the uncomfortable truth of these stories. We can look at the power of Jesus and say, yes, he has power over our lives. But we still suffer. We still feel fear. We still feel all of the ramifications of our decisions. The great thing about this story is that Jesus calmed the storm. that he sent Legion out of this man and he gave him a new lease on life. Is that the gospel you are sending to your neighbors? Does your gospel sound as freeing, as relieving as Jesus' gospel does? Because that is what he presents to us. It doesn't solve all of the problems. It doesn't have to. It's his power in our lives. If you have any needs this morning, any at all, please come forward as we stand and as we continue to worship our God.